Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast contains explicit language.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
We're Macklemoring this shit.
Macklemore?
We're the Macklemost.
Macklemore.
That sucked.
So that happened. This week, your esteemed legislators came together to try to sort out the Highway Trust Fund and its, you know, funding. It was, as you might expect, a struggle. We'll talk about how they did and try to remember a halcyon time when this sort of legislative work was easier. Meanwhile, we have got some hot Elizabeth Warren on underprepared financial executive action for you. As the Massachusetts senator continues to fight for a new regulation that would make it illegal for financial advisors to rip off their customers, she came face to face with Primerica President Peter Schneider, representing a vital sector of our nation's scam economy. It's an MMA fight for your money, and we have the fun blow by blow. Finally, former NSA / CIA head Michael Hayden is going to deliver a keynote address to a gathering of fresh fruit lobbyists. What do you get when you cross fruit growers with spies? Come for the bananas history of U.S. intelligence fruit coups, and stay for all the fruit puns that we could come up with. I'm Jason Linkins, with Huffington Post reporters Laura Barone-Lopez, Zach Carter, Arthur Delaney, and Allie Watkins. And here's what happened first. Wow, what an intro. Hi, I'm Jason Linkins, editor of the Press of the Huffington Post. Welcome to another edition of So That Happened. We have so many things to talk about today, and I'm going to warn everyone up front, there's a lot of puns, so if you don't like puns, I apologize.
How could you know there's a lot of puns before we've even started talking?
Why are you the one screwing up the temporal existence of the podcast this time?
Yeah, suck it, time.
I just know. It's almost as if I recorded a segment already. And
don't tell people that.
Know that.
You're the one who's telling people that this was stitched together after the fact.
You brought it up. You brought it up.
Don't tell people that we're not in their time.
I can't wait to talk about politics today. I'm so excited.
I know. Let's start with some bittersweet news, okay? So this is the last podcast produced by our good friend, Ibrahim Balki.
Mm.
The last one. He's moving on to HBO's Vice show. And moving on to New York City to work on that. I think that probably Ibrahim is the guy who, like, more than anyone is responsible for this podcast. So if you like it, you should thank him. If you don't like it, you should blame him.
I would just encourage people to give me credit for things they like, and Ibrahim.
Okay, give Zach like. Credit.
He's
for
going out
every...
the door, so you just might as well shower him with pain.
Right, but it was, like, Ibrahim who first was, like, grabbed Zach and I to come into this room and say things about soccer. And that was cool. And then Zach said a bunch of really, really, really mean thing about Belgians. And Ibrahim said, well, I guess we're going to need to edit this too.
That's right. It was good that we did not release that material.
So this is his last one.
So you don't like waffles?
Someday some right-wing side is going to release that stuff and I'm going to be in deep shit.
Maybe. I mean, do you think the right-wing's going to be, do you think the Federalist is going to write, Zach Carter trashes Belgium? They'll probably try to hire you. It's like, yeah, it's like, not. It won't be
they
like
would
that.
Say Zach Carter is ignorant of waffles. Media ignorance of syrup.
Zach never saw In Bruges, the movie. Yeah, okay, so it was all a dream. We used to be produced by Ibrahim.
He's a good man. He's going to do great at HBO.
Yes.
Got good things coming for him.
Right, so let's move on from the past.
Donald Trump.
What? Why? Why?
I got to write a story which said he was.
Because we're moving on from the past. We're going back to the future.
So, okay.
Oh my God,
you were the worst.
Trump is Biff.
Yes, so.
Listeners of this show already know Trump is Biff, an idea.
Do they, though? Why would they know that?
Who is Biff, Arthur?
Biff's from Back to the Future.
But why would our listeners know about that already, Arthur?
Because I've been promoting this idea with my every every fiber of my being.
It's not because you talked about it in the segment we already recorded and think
we talked about it last week, bro.
Podcast time. Did we? Okay, I guess you're right.
What a mess.
Biff is so good.
I literally think that Arthur's right, and I'm turning every single podcast into like Donnie Darko.
Anyway, so Donald Trump was awesome this week.
I
look forward to many more weeks of Donald Trump.
All hits this week from Donald Trump. His speech in South Carolina, I wrote a piece on this. It's really interesting to me the way he is channeling populist rhetoric, but basically only as like a really hardcore nationalist.
Yeah.
He's just like a racist Bernie Sanders. It's amazing.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to protect Social Security and make Mexico build a giant wall.
Yeah, you're like, okay, I guess.
He's going to the border today. The border of your dreams and your nightmares. Yeah. He's going to find the real rapists, I think.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yep. And poor Lindsey Graham. Finally, someone gave out someone's phone number, and it was Lindsey Graham's.
And it was hilarious.
It was pretty hilarious.
I wonder if the cowardice of other Republican candidates who are so massaged by consultants and coached and told everything to say and do creates an opening for some jerk who is just acts like a jerk, and everyone's like, oh, thank God. Thank God someone's up there being a total jerk. We've been starved of this kind of rudeness.
I think that in the sense that every poll has a crazification factor of like probably like 23%, 24%, that's fine. Those people are finally getting what they wanted, what they've asked for all this time.
I mean, I always think of the Republican primaries in 2012 about this. I mean, remember, there is like the Let Him Die caucus that exists in the Republican Party.
Yep.
And that is like a really nasty, mean-spirited part of the base. But Trump, it's interesting to me. I think he appeals to the mean-spirited part of the base by just kind of being a jerk. But with his policies, he's not actually pushing Let Him Die policies. He's pushing, if you're an American, we're going to do great things for you, whether you're rich or poor. And we're going to do it by really sticking it to China and Mexico, who are bad guys.
But, Zach, that's...
Screw them.
That's the policy. The words you just said are the full extent of it.
That's it, yeah.
He is the guy who thought that after the Iraq War, we should have literally, like, carted off all of Iraq's oil.
And like in a big pickup truck.
Right, exactly. It was like, I was like, first of all, A, I don't know how we do that. B, I don't know how any nation on earth supports us in a war ever again just say, by the way, it was about plunder. We're all 16th century colonialist douchebags now. Like, I think that probably the coalition of the willing would have been the coalition of the what?
It's unfortunate that Trump's moment is so fleeting and that we won't have this much Trump all year, you know, for the rest
of the year. We'll see. He can fund himself for as long as he wants. He can stay in this race and be relevant at 20% for as long as he wants.
You're kind of buying into the notion that he's actually got billions of dollars to his name.
Yeah, it's a questionable notion.
Even if it's only $200 million or something, if he spends, what, $10 million on this thing, he can stay in for a long time.
I suppose that's true, but so can a lot of people.
And on Thursday, he threatened that, you know, if Republicans are too mean to him, he'll go third party.
And that will just totally fuck them over.
Hillary Clinton's watching this like,
it's interesting. If you go back to the last like third parties, like kind of conservative candidate, Ross Perot in the 90s, very, very, very strange stories about from the Ross Perot candidacy that people have mostly forgotten. You know, like he at one point said like Bush was collaborating with the CIA to like embarrass his daughter. That was why he like pulled out of the race when people thought he was, you know, somewhat viable at least. Very, very strange stuff. And he stayed in for a long time, basically a self-funded gajillionaire. I think we could have if Trump wants to, he could stay in for a long time and do all sorts of weird stuff that will be fun to watch. Probably bad for the country.
I think he'll be handed a Manila envelope at one point by Republican operatives, and they'll be like, see what's in there. and then he'll be, you know, he'll leave.
Surely the Republican operatives would hand it to us.
Well, I'm saying that's what they'd say.
Tim Miller, are you out there listening?
What's in this envelope?
I deserve that envelope.
Made copies of it. and we will give it to someone else.
You know, it's funny. You bring up Ross Perot. I had a acting teacher in college who was a big Ross Perot fan. And I remember, like, on election day, I was just like, she was just like, you know what's going to happen, Jason. You're going to walk into that voting booth tomorrow, and I know you're going to think about this, and I know you're going to pull that lever for Ross Perot. And I was like, do you want to put some money on it right now?
Are you allowed to gamble on votes?
Because I'm willing to guarantee you I'm not going to pull the lever for Ross Perot. But you be you. You be you. She was cool.
Nobody said that in the 90s.
It was fine.
Nobody said you be you in the 90s. That is like totally last.
People totally years. Said you be you in the 90s. I was like, what's up, Bay? You going to vote for Ross Perot?
No,
hey,
said,
that's not true.
They said Reality Bites.
Absolutely true.
And hate the job at the Gap.
That's right. That's right. We're all way into Ethan Hawke at the time. So, Zach, you wrote a thing about, what's the name of the lady?
She's kind of new.
She's pretty new, yeah.
Drinks
tall boys, very cool. She's from Oklahoma.
Oh, Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
She, wow.
Drinks tall boys. No, she doesn't.
She totally does, dude. Did you not remember her telling the story about when Harry Reid called her up to, like, to come and be the TARP overseer?
Uh-huh.
TARP overseer, right?
Yeah.
The bailout overseer, and she said she was at home. She's having a barbecue, and she had like one handful of like food and like a tall boy, and someone handed her the phone. It's Harry Reid. Yeah, man.
That happens.
I don't think
Arthur
she said tall boy.
She did.
I dispute this one detail.
All right,
we should get her on the show again and ask her how she feels about the one beer policy that
when she was running against Scott Brown. She had the most epic beer posturing of anyone I've ever
seen.
What was it? Well, she had previously said, you know, I have one beer and I'm like, woo. And then she was out on the campaign trail slugging beers at, you know, Boston bars or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And people are like, what's your favorite kind of beer, Elizabeth Warren? Oh, she's like, oh, I like Sam Adams, Guinness, Michelob Ultra. She's like, no, you don't.
No. Yo, I'll tell you right now.
But then she won.
I'll tell you right now. She won pretty handily.
Suckers.
I'll tell you right now. I'm sure Elizabeth Warren has pounded some Schlitz.
Oh, yeah.
You're out of Schlitz.
You're out of beer.
thanks for working the branding in.
Yeah. That's like an old Schlitz commercial. It's hilarious because the idea is that Schlitz is the only true beer. So when you're out, you know, no other beer counts. But actually, it's the last thing you drink when you have a party. So when you are out of Schlitz, you are, in fact, out of beer. It's the grossest.
We are angling for
you're out of Schlitz, you wake up in a park.
We are angling for a Schlitz sponsorship. No, there's nothing better in the world than being like a Midwest bar. Where the beer's cheap and everyone's friendly and it's great.
Elizabeth Warren, my story here had nothing to do with beer. Zilch to do with beer.
Never mind.
Elizabeth Warren really embarrassed this guy from a company called Primerica at a hearing middle of this week.
What is Primerica?
Primerica is basically, I believe that the term of art for it is multi-level marketing company. But
how many stadiums do they have named after them?
Good question.
Probably at least one.
Yeah, it's probably some hockey team somewhere.
Yeah.
So Primerica, it's sort of like Herbalife or Amway, you know, where people sell this stuff. You know, like, okay, well, you know, I've got some beauty products for you, and I get a commission on my beauty products. But if I go out and recruit more people to be salespeople sort of under my force, and I got a commission on their sales. And then if they go out and recruit more people, I got a commission on those people's sales, and on and on and on. So in these sort of schemes, you know, a few people end up making a ton of money because they get all these recruits and they're getting commissions all off of everybody else. And most people just don't make much of anything and sort of go around trying to talk their friends into buying a bunch of crap that they don't need. The difference with Primerica is that instead of selling, you know, herbal supplements or beauty cream, they sell financial products. They sell insurance, annuities. You know, you can buy into mutual funds with them.
So tell your friends to buy these derivatives. I don't get it.
You go and you tell people life insurance. You know, like, hey, you know, you would this would be a good thing for you to buy. How about saving for retirement with, you know, this mutual fund?
Oh, man, you're going to lose all your friends.
They have 190,000 people last year paid for the opportunity to join the Primerica sales force. It's a nominal fee. It's like $100 or something.
Right.
You pay to Primerica to be considered. And their overall sales force moved from like 95,000 to 98,000. So with 190,000 people paying Primerica money to be considered as a potential sales agent, they only got like 3,000 more net people. So they have a huge amount of turnover. They don't approve that many people to even actually
sell things.
But they
take that cash.
Yeah, and then the stuff the people who actually do become certified Primerica sales reps make like $6,000 a year on average. And if you're a financial professional and you're making $6,000 a year, something is wrong. Something is wrong. You just like if you are a client of a financial professional who makes $6,000 a year, that is probably not that's probably not the right advisor for you.
You could probably get better advice off the back of like Nutella boxes.
Well, I mean, I think I haven't sat in on any Primerica pitches, so I don't know. But they have
put
had
it on
problems.
Bread.
Watch some sponsors.
And so this is one of the problems that Elizabeth Warren brought up at this hearing, because this has to do with Obama has got he's got this retirement security rule that Warren very much supports.
That's the big thing here.
Yeah,
that we should explain.
That was an Obama Warren team up in a year where things have been fractious. That was between them. That was a big team up moment. For
yeah.
Them.
So Obama's gonna make financial advisors act in the best interest of their clients. That's what the rule said. So simple.
It's really simple.
So along comes Primerica guy to say that this isn't good.
Yeah.
At a Capitol Hill hearing Republicans put together.
Wow, that dude must have drawn the fucking short straw. That's all I know.
Well, so that's the thing, because it's really hard to get to explain. You know, Republicans loathe this rule. But it's really hard to come out and say, you know, I think financial advisors should be allowed to act
to scam their clients.
Yes, in order to enrich themselves at their clients' expense.
Right.
Nobody
it's
really
a vital
wants to
sector
come out
and say of the
that.
Scam economy we're trying to tamp down on.
And so, like for years, you know, the financial sector opposed this and just kept this rule from coming up. It was initially proposed in 2010.
Oh, Scott Brown, meanwhile, is like selling pills.
he's selling diet pills.
Peer-to-peer sales of diet pills. Just
Scott Brown is living
just to tie everything together.
Yes. Scott Brown, at last, is living his best life, and you should leave him alone.
Well, he lost weight. He looks
right.
It looks terrific.
It looks fucking good.
Shilling pills.
Less filling,
pills.
Tastes great.
Some of his pills.
Diet pills.
Anyway, yeah. So this kind of stuff is all around us.
Yeah, there's like $17 billion a year that people lose from conflicted advice. You know, your financial advisor says, you should invest in this thing because I'm secretly getting a free Corvette. And if you buy this, even though it earns whatever, not as much as some other asset you could invest in. So it's a big deal, and Republicans have been opposing it. So they got Primerica to come, and the president of Primerica, a guy named Peter Schneider, to come and testify against the rule. And his pitch was this, and it's very interesting. He said, you know, we serve low-income people. A typical Primerica client has $30,000 to $100,000 that they make a year.
That's not low-income at all.
For people who are investing for retirement outside of like the
okay,
it's not a whole lot, because if you make $30,000 a year, you don't have a whole lot left over to put away for 20 years from now. And they said, look, we all agree that that financial advisors should act in the best interest of their clients, but it just so happens that the way this rule is written, technically, we would have to dump all of our low income clients, and that would be terrible, because these are the people who need good financial advice the most. This is coming from a guy who
gives bad financial advice.
Recruits 19-year-olds with no experience to be financial advisors who will make $6,000 a year.
I'm here to give you some financial advice.
Right. So Elizabeth Warren is like,
buy low, sell high.
Right. So Elizabeth Warren is like, so you said everybody agrees that financial advisors should act in the best interests of their clients. So I was reading an article today, and just to be clear, it's an article that I'd written for the Huffington Post.
It's all about Zach. Yeah, well done.
Who wrote that article again? I forgot.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
So, God.
And she says, you know, it looks like there are 238 public workers in Florida, you know, firefighters, teachers, architects, whatever, who you set aside millions of dollars for a settlement with because you had advised these people who were very close to retirement that they take their publicly guaranteed public pension plans, get out of them, and get into a much riskier 401k IRA type plan so that you could manage their assets when they actually retired. Do you think, Mr. Primerica guy, that is good financial advice? It's for people who have a guaranteed pension to get out of it right before retirement and go into the stock market. And no financial advisor in their right mind would ever argue this. It's just totally bonkers. No one would ever do this. And so the guy from Primerica is like, we actually, you know, that doesn't have any case, any bearing on us because those weren't actually our retirement clients. And that was true because they had not actually, you know, after they got this crappy advice from Primerica, they sued them instead of signing up to have them manage their money. But it's exactly the kind of behavior.
That's a pretty good trick. It's like, oh, all the people who are mad at us because of what we did to them, they're not our clients, technically.
Right.
So was this like a flop sweat situation?
I wish there are a lot of criminals that I wish could like make that
sweat situation.
Flop sweat?
Yeah, flop sweat.
When you're up on stage and it's not going well and you start profusely sweating because it's a flop.
Oh, he had some serious flop sweat going on. Because Elizabeth Warren was like, let's be clear. You gave them this advice. Do you think that's good advice? And he was like, regulators said we acted properly. And she's like, yeah, exactly, because it's legal, which is why we want to change this rule. If you're testifying against changing. And he's like, he just squirms. And it was just really kind of – you almost felt bad for the guy. And then you realize that he runs, like, the Herbalife of financial services. And you were like, no, actually, I don't feel bad for him at all. But it was just incredible. I couldn't believe Republicans had thought, like, this is going to be, like, the sympathetic actor. That like, you know, that everyone's going to be like, you know what? Obama's gone too far now. Primerica might lose some money.
Schlitz.
The moral of the story is be very careful about financial advisors you pick. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who work for Primerica who are nice people who mean well and who will give you good advice. But there are probably a lot of people who have no idea what they are doing. And it's when you're talking about money, you should actually get Elizabeth Warren's book on it. She has a really great book on personal finance.
What's the status of the
politician? Yeah. She's doing a good
what's
work
the status on. Of the rule, the fiduciary duty rule?
You know, they're going through the process with it. So I think they're expecting to have something finalized by I think January.
Oh, they're going through the process of letting 500 companies tell them it sucks, don't do it.
Right, and then they're going to do it anyway because they're just going to do it. There's no reason for them to have made it this far. But it takes time. There's comment period.
Well, I hope that at the time that you, gentle listener, are hearing these words, that I am drinking a nice. Cold tall boy of Schlitz.
I hope so too. Hey there, listener of this podcast. I've got a quick little thing I'd love to chat with you about. Are you a regular So That Happened listener? Well, let us know. Send me an electronic communication with your electronic communicating devices at sothathappened@huffingtonpost.com. Tell us what you think of the show, what we're messing up, and who you'd like to hear more from or more about. Okay, back to the program. Okay, we're back, and I'm here now with Arthur Delaney.
Hey.
And Laura Barone Lopez.
Hey.
And you know, a great man once said that life is a highway, and I want to ride it until I'm eligible for Social Security, and then I should be thrown off that highway.
I thought he said all night long.
Or that. One of the other things, I don't know. Something like that. We're talking about the fucking perennial inability to pass a simple highway bill.
This was the only thing Congress was really doing this
right.
week.
Right. I know. Mm-hmm. I know. They're such underachievers.
Laura led our coverage. How'd it go?
Well, Arthur helped me. But it's a bit rocky. There's some roadblocks.
This is going to be a real pun-heavy podcast.
Yeah, my headlines have been pretty pun-heavy. They make me laugh. So a longer-term highway bill hasn't been passed since 2009. It's been a bunch of short patches from Congress because they can't shore up enough money to pay for the highway trust fund.
And they won't do a gas tax.
Exactly. They won't raise the federal gas tax, even though a number of states, 16 so far over the last 2 years, have raised their gas tax.
In order to pay for roads within their purview.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And eight of those are Republican states. So,
how long has it been since the feds have raised the gas tax?
1990s.
It's been since early 90s. It's been at 18.4 cents.
Now, this is the primary funding mechanism for the Highway Trust Fund,
and it
still
is.
It still is, yes. About $34 billion per year goes into the fund from the federal gas tax. But because since it hasn't been touched, it doesn't account for inflation, it doesn't account for increased fuel efficiency in vehicles. So there are within the Democratic caucus, you know, both in the House and the Senate, there are people like Senator Dick Durbin, the minority whip, who is in favor of raising it. On the House side, Xavier Becerra is in favor of raising it. But people like Senator Schumer are saying, look, the vast majority of people in both parties aren't for raising this, so we're not going to touch it. And Republicans are saying they're definitely not going to raise the gas tax. So
because Grover Norquist will haunt their dreams. But to the extent – when we talk about the Highway Trust Fund, the Federal Highway Trust Fund, what kind of things is that actually procuring for ordinary people? Like what does it actually pay to do?
Uh-huh. Well, it pays for – in the majority of states, it accounts for over half of all the money that they put into their roads, their bridges, their highways. So that's, you know, whether it's long-term projects that are expanding, you know, intersections and highways. In Arkansas, I was talking to the people at the Department of Transportation there, and they were saying, look, you know, we have this massive project that we want to get going, which would expand the highway system going out of Little Rock because that gets insanely congested. And that costs, you know, taxpayers billions in money and all the gas that they're wasting and all the time that they're wasting not being with family or, you know, taking time to get into work. And so they can't do that now. They had to put that project on hold because they don't know when the next paycheck is going to come from the federal government. And also in another state, they had to completely stop their overlay program. And that's where they, you know, cover up potholes and they fix all the roads and all the problems from harsh winters. And so that isn't going to happen now, which, you know, inevitably could mess up some people's cars.
So the Highway Trust Fund, in short, it makes the roads good. It makes the cars go.
So without, okay, so if we're not going to raise the gas tax, how are these guys creatively coming up with ways to even fund the trust fund?
They went into their offices in the Senate and they and they started looking under the cushions of their couches.
Don't they mostly find, like, hard candy and parts of their old dentures in the couches?
And that's basically what they put into the legislation they announced this week. It was, like, little folded-up pieces of paper that fell out of someone's pocket, like, 3 years ago. And they unfolded it, and they're like, whoa, this is an excellent piece of legislation that we could stitch into our bill. So they got 16 different things that each raise, like, $1 billion.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Except for the federal bank.
There is one substantial piece, like more than a third of it comes from ending this bank subsidy the Federal Reserve is giving out, cutting a rate that it pays banks. But
ending
anyway,
bank subsidy sounds good.
Right? None of it was all things, all but like one or two of them totally unrelated to highways. And one of them, two of them actually were total toxic waste politically, and they had to be jettisoned at the last
Why
second.
Were they toxic waste?
Because they cut Social Security.
Mm. Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Now, I'm not a...
Well, thanks for the payoff on my...
I'm not a big, fancy Washington consultant.
Aren't you, though?
But I've heard cutting Social Security can be an unpopular strategy.
It's the third rail of American politics, and we need tax money to fund more third rails, too, by the way, which is kind
of... No, this is not about rails.
I know.
That was the problem.
Yeah, okay. Sorry.
You kind of killed it.
I got over my skis. You're right.
So what happened? How did this go down, Laura, this week when they the Social Security thing was like on the horizon, and then what happened to it?
So in the final text of the bill, which was released on Tuesday, that's when they announced the deal. It was between Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and Senator Barbara Boxer for the Democrats. She worked it all out, you know, said this is a breakthrough deal. But then when it came out and it had this Social Security provision in it, which would have cut benefits for people that have outstanding warrants and so-called fugitive felons.
They call them fugitive felons. Like, they give them the shittiest name. This cuts benefit. And this is the, you know, they what the Congress actually, they cut, they passed a law called the No Benefits for Nazis Act.
I remember that.
No Social Security for Nazis. So this is in that vein, I think.
Sure, we're saving a lot of money.
So
the five or six Nazis came out, that are left.
Yeah, it came out, and then a good amount of Democrats were like, what is this? We aren't for this. The House completely said, you know, how dare you, the House Democrats.
How do you target fugitive felons specifically?
Well, they have a database, and, you know, law enforcement lets them know, like the U.S. Marshals and the FBI lets the database know if there's a warrant for a person. But they actually did something like this in the welfare reform law, and it was broadened in... You know, people with the same name were having their Social Security retirement benefits cut off.
Oh, right, because that notorious government efficiency on top of everything else.
Yeah, so, and all these courts were like, what are you doing? Stop. Stop taking, and like someone wrote a bad check for groceries 20 years ago and had his, you know, only income severed, like an old man. And so they stopped, and Social Security had to repay half.
So wait, this is literally warrants for anything? This is like bench warrants? This is like I skipped jury duty when I was a...
It was in this
college.
This new provision.
I skipped jury duty.
This new provision. They say it's a.
I was leaving town. I had no choice. It was like 3 days before I left town. I was like, no, fuck this.
I'm calling the cops.
Go ahead.
How dare you?
This new thing they said it had a. It's for people with an outstanding warrant and people who law enforcement say they are pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
Social Security Administration, I believe they say they already do this. So I'm not sure where they came up with the idea that this saves money. But anyway. It
and
proved
they,
to be toxic waste.
Yeah, and then to tone it down a bit, Boxer negotiated to where it would have a protection, and it said, what did it say, Arthur? It said for good cause, individuals that exhibit good cause.
Yeah, it just said Social Security can say, don't worry about this person.
Yeah, but
he's
then
he exhibits good cause. So is there some panel that's just like, oh, that guy. Mm-hmm.
So on
he should be
Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, they... because
just last night.
Just last night.
Oh, wait, we shouldn't. I fucked
why
it up.
Can't you figure this out?
Sorry. That's my fault. That's my fault.
Nobody, there's no time.
There's no time, right?
It's Thursday morning.
No, you're just.
Stop, Laura.
You're just doubling down on what Arthur hates.
We're not in time right now.
Okay, let's go back. Wednesday night. I remember Wednesday night well.
Okay. Wednesday night, they had their second procedural vote because the first one failed. Democrats were like, no, we want more time to look at this bill. So they tried again last night. And in order to get more Democrats on board, Arthur and I were told that that in the Democratic caucus, they were like, look, we're not on board with this Social Security provision. It needs to get out if you want our votes. And so McConnell and Boxer decided to pull it from the bill.
Yeah.
So they got enough Democrats to vote to advance the bill. So now the bill is on the floor. But
without the toxic waste.
Without that, yeah. So this definitely was key, though, in order to get those votes because Democrats were going into the meeting on Wednesday before
and House Democrats had passed their own bill way before, right?
Oh, there's this whole...
Yeah, it's a whole different bill.
So now they can accept the Senate bill and not have to go to conference.
That's a whole other question because... So
there's a whole car crash in the future.
Basically.
Ooh, more puns. I like that. Okay.
Well, I didn't say a train wreck.
Okay.
Car crashes happen on highways, too. We should have set pun rules when we started.
We should have.
Just keep it to, you know, traffic-related puns.
Okay. Car crashes. Okay, I'm not going to debate this with you further.
All right. So what happened was the House, last week passed its a five-month extension of the Highway Trust Fund. It's a, you know, so that means that it would let the fund expire December 18th instead of on July 31st. But the Senate decided it was going to go its own route, did this long-term bill, or is working on this long-term bill. And so far, House Republican leadership has said, well, we're not going to bring it up. They should just be taking up our five-month extension. Why, you know, we're not going to be doing anything with this bill. They're standing by their bill saying there's no point in doing this. And they're having trouble as it is.
And the funding's about to, they're going to go on recess for August and there will be no funding.
If they don't.
I feel
it is a game of chicken.
It's weird. I feel like they're close to passing a responsible bill in this regard. And they don't want to?
It's responsible. It's bipartisan. And so in that sense, it's responsible. And the Senate's going to pass it, but the House is just like...
And the other problem is House Democrats, because House Democrats have... they have issue with almost all of the offsets, so...
The other offsets are... It's a grab bag of stuff that was in the couch cushions. Like, there's things related to how lenders report what people with mortgages... have been paying, you know, the value of homes. They retrieve $1 billion right. from a leftover Making Home Affordable program
yeah,
that never
wasn't
worked.
Working, yeah.
Yeah, there's just all this couch, all this pieces of hard candy and old pennies, and none of it really had a hearing. So even though it's like bipartisan and stuff, it's still got this kind of lame feel to it. So the House is, I think that emboldens the House. Like, what is this stuff?
And I think they're also like, wait, they're saying that it authorizes spending levels for 6 years, but then they actually only have money for 3 years to pay for the fund for 3 years. So they're like, this really isn't as long, you know, term as everyone wants it to be. So why are we doing it? That's kind of the tone coming from the House.
Oh, weird, 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 weird. We used to, it used to not be that hard to pass a highway funding bill. Right? Am I crazy? Am I just crazy?
They've been kicking the can down the road.
Let the record say that no one's actually looking at me like I'm crazy.
No,
I'm trying to.
Oh, sorry.
Oh.
I guess I'm crazy.
It's been bad for the totality of the Obama era.
Mm-hmm. Since 2009.
Oh, sorry. I remember a period of time before Obama.
I mean, but calling.
I'm old enough to remember whether it weren't Obama as president.
I'm just trying
guys.
To say it's as bad as everything else that's been going on.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. I would just like, everyone talks about if we had, what's his name? Sam's buddy from the old Secretary of Transportation.
Ray LaHood.
Ray LaHood up over here. He'd be like, oh, we used to pass these things all the time. I don't understand why we can't pass these things.
Washington is broken.
Yeah. I love
him. Yeah, well, we know.
I love Ray LaHood. Good man. Good man.
His solution to this would be a bicycle.
It would be a bicycle, and that's okay. That's totally all right. I love bicycles.
Well,
although for other people. Not for myself.
Mm.
Yeah, they are, like, attractive to look at.
Yeah.
It's great that people ride
Glad
bikes.
Glad people riding them. I've been run off the road one time too many, and the last time I was like, fuck bicycles. I literally threw my bike in the dumpster.
I haven't gotten back on mine since I sprained my ankle.
And then walked bleeding into my apartment.
Well, listen, guys, it looks like this funding thing's not going to work. House and Senate aren't going to get together. You better... Get your bike out of the dumpster.
What's your what are your future highway puns?
Senate hits pothole.
Ooh, good. That's pretty good.
When they get an agreement, I think they'll
they'll
retrieve their easy pass from the Senate glove box.
Did you guys ever read that story about that dude who was getting potholes in his community fixed by going out onto the potholes and spray painting dicks on them?
Oh, I did see that.
Yeah, and like people would be like, oh, someone painted dicks all over the street, and they would come and like repave. Because they wanted to cover the dicks up.
Yeah.
That's
like,
smart.
That is like a brilliant thing to do. Like, if people, here's some official.
If you're listening,
people out there in your community, some set of happen advice. If there's something in your community that's broken, needs to be fixed, is a pothole, a crumbling bridge, get some spray paint, go out in the cover of darkness and spray paint dicks all over it.
Mm-hmm.
Just cover it in spray painted dicks and it will get fixed.
Wow.
Because apparently, like, the depiction of a dick fiction.
Huh. Okay. Yes, keep going.
Don't stop there.
Don't stop.
I was doing like that was like a take. Okay. If we were a visual medium, uh-huh. People would have appreciated that I did a good take.
It was good, Jason. Come
okay. I forgot where I was going with that.
You were just telling all of America to spray paint dicks
on go
its
do
problems.
It. Go yes.
We don't need a highway bill. We don't need an Obamacare.
Spray.
Put a dick on it.
Oh, it's like put a bird on it.
Yeah, only a dick.
Yeah.
All right, we're done.
Okay, we're done.
All right, done.
Yeah, absolutely.
See you later.
Arthur Delaney. You can follow him on Twitter.
At Arthur Delaney HP.
Yes, at Arthur Delaney HP. Please follow him. He's desperate. He's going to paint a dick on his Twitter account if you don't follow him.
Whoa.
No, I won't. I'll do it if you do follow me.
And oh,
either way works, I guess. And Laura Barone Lopez is LBA. Wait, no.
I'll do it. It's at LBARRONLOPEZ.
There you go.
The real person who came up with Triff is Biff is Trump, and I just fumbled.
Oh, that's right.
Within our office, Laura Barone Lopez was the first person to recognize that Donald Trump is Biff from Back to the Future.
Yes.
For whatever that's worth.
You guys are the only people who have done something wonderful with the fact that Donald Trump is running for president.
We emailed.
I congratulate you.
We emailed the actor who played Biff, and also Robert Zemeckis, and the Bob Gale, the co-author of the screenplay, and none of them are willing to confirm our theory.
It's very close to the bone. Go check that out on our. I'll put it on the page. Just Google Biff Tannen and Donald Trump, and it'll come up.
All right, bye.
Laura, Arthur, thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, guys, we are back, and now we are joined by Allie Watkins.
Hello.
Yay. Allie Watkins is here. We're going to talk about some devious stuff.
Something like that.
Allie is super excited today because she wrote a story about former CIA director, right, Michael?
Former CIA director, former NSA director. He had like a stint as director of, master spy overlord.
Yes, master of puppets,
yes.
Michael Hayden.
Who is like the least spy-looking person in the world.
Right. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know, but you know, it's funny. I think I remember like in the original like Robert Ludlum Bourne series, like the point of Jason Bourne was like he's kind of like a schlubby dad bod dude who was just like, whoa, I can kill people with my bare hands. What the fuck? And like in the movies, he became like Matt Damon, like Ubermensch. Right?
Yeah,
am I remembering the books correctly?
And Michael Hayden kind of just looks like he's a grumpy insurance sales agent.
Right.
I was actually talking to some people about this a couple months ago, back when all the torture stuff was happening. And they were saying how like their jobs are a lot harder with John Brennan because John Brennan just looks like he wants to take you into a room and rip your fingernails off, whereas Michael Hayden is just like,
hey, guys.
Hey, guys. But when you really
look at it. I've seen all of your photographs.
So Michael Hayden was up to some stuff.
Yes.
That at first blush appears like super duper innocuous.
I mean, my Twitter feed was really funny about it. So he was solicited by the United Fresh Produce Growers Association for their annual conference, the United Fresh Washington Conference 2015.
Sounds fresh.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's like the Sweet Green Music Festival.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
It would be really awesome if they got Billy Idol. Billy Idol and Michael Hayden headlining a United Fruit Growers Association conference. But yeah, my Twitter feed was just like,
rock
what
the cradle
the hell?
Of trade unionists from Guatemala.
But yeah, everyone in my Twitter feed was like, well, I guess we're expanding our brand. Which, I mean, my first reaction was like, okay, I guess we're trying something else. But when you really look at it, it's not that rare when you look at this long, bloody history of fruit spies.
Fruit spies!
Oh, that's the pun!
No, it's getting there.
The story
had so many puns and terrible jokes. And our wonderful bureau chief, Ryan Grimm, saved me from myself and said, you do not want people groaning this much when they read your story.
What were some of the other puns?
The lead was Michael Hayden's new audience prefers cutting boards to waterboards.
Oh!
That was a good one. I thought that was a good one.
That was good.
And there was a nice reference to rectal feeding. How we were leaving the raisins and pine nuts to the pros this time. And there was a small jab about whether Hayden prefers to have gloves on or off when he handles his fruits and vegetables.
Hey, Allie Watkins, what do you call Michael Hayden buried up to his neck in guavas?
Dead?
A nice start! There you go.
Okay, I got it out of my system now.
All right, so like, good. What? But there's like kind of a complicated history between the CIA and fruit growers.
There is.
Say, yeah.
It's. I mean, there's just this really terrible history between the CIA and corporate interests and murdering people in general, which just happened to intersect with a giant fruit company in the 50s.
And what fruit company was that?
This was United Fruit, which was this like giant conglomerate fruit company that eventually got broken up through various antitrust laws and eventually devolved into Chiquita. But I mean, the backstory of this is the Dulles brothers, which I mean, we named an airport after, but there's this fantastic book written on the Dulles brothers that the lead of the New York Times book review was, if you want to understand why the United States is hated everywhere, read this book, which is totally accurate. I mean,
maybe it shouldn't be an international airport then. You would keep it to domestic flights.
You would think. They used to have his, like, statue in one of the brothers' statues in there, and they, like, removed it. I don't know if it was for moral purposes or it's shoved in some, like, conference room now. But anyway, so the fruit connection here is the Dulles brothers, you know, lived the typical American dream of being born into this, like, political legacy family, going to Princeton, being very successful Wall Street lawyers, and then conveniently finding themselves, one sitting in the Secretary of State's office, one sitting in the CIA director's office, and having a fairly laissez-faire president when it came to foreign policy who just let them pillage and colonialize everywhere. So that was, I mean, it worked out well for them and their corporate partners. So they both came up through this law firm and the United Fruit Corporation. They were both involved, remained involved throughout their 10 years in their respective government offices. And when the Guatemalan government, you know, won independence and the new leader said, hey, we're going to take back like some of this land that United Fruit has just kind of taken over. United Fruit was like, what the hell? And the Dulles brothers were like, that's okay, we're here. And under this like wonderful guise of communism, they convinced everybody that the new Guatemalan government was like fostering ties to Russia, and everybody freaked out. So a CIA-led rebel army helped overthrow the fairly benign Guatemalan government. And, you know, then bananas fostered everywhere.
And made things free for Chiquita.
Yeah.
Right. Mm.
So Michael Hayden is just being like, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
He's just carrying forth the tradition.
Instead of going from the private sector to government and bending government to my will, I'll just go from government to the private sector and then maybe bend government to my will.
Yeah. And, I mean, United Fresh is really pumped about it. They were, like, almost so excited that I couldn't burst. Are you sure you want a war criminal? Like, talk. But I like, couldn't do
alleged war criminal. Yeah,
alleged war. Sorry, star. You know, alleged war criminal. You know, like, did everyone just kind of forget all this stuff?
Torture with a T. Yeah,
but not only happened with torture, but this also, like, really kind of weird long history that you have with, like, totally screwing up international law and murdering innocent people to grow bananas.
Right. How many ounces of, like, of blood do you think we
that are in each Chiquita banana
every time we eat a piece of fruit?
Oh man,
at least a little bit. There's a little bit of shame and a dead soul attached to everything we eat.
Yeah,
it's an interesting problem for a lot of different industries, though.
I
think about this like with, you know, with textiles and stuff. Like, we outlawed slavery in the United States in, you know, 1864. However, a lot of the stuff that we buy is still made with, you know, forced labor or human trafficking, which is, you know, our euphemism for slavery. It's just in other countries. We're like, oh, it's over there. Don't worry about it.
No, Highline just did that really good piece on, you know, the myth of the ethical shopper.
Mm-hmm.
So
you don't just have to feel bad when you eat. You can also feel bad when you wear clothes.
You get dressed, wear clothes.
I'm all for feeling bad all the time and also feeling sort of hopeless and powerless in the face of unremitting misery.
How can you not when you're in Washington, man?
It's pretty great. There's another thing I wanted
Jason,
to talk.
I got a song for you. We gotta get these songs released so that you can feel better.
There's another thing I wanted to talk about while you were here, Allie, and that is the future of cars. Cars.
Oh,
which,
okay, this is new.
Yes, cars. This which this
dystopian.
Week, yeah, this week, a dude made news by allowing his Jeep to be hacked.
I saw that.
Yes, he was driving his Jeep, and hackers like actually took his Jeep down. Like one might take down like a DDoS attack on a Jeep. Pretty dope. My first thought was that's going to be hard to like explain to your insurance company, no, dude, I was hacked. Because isn't that what you say anytime like you get caught doing something bad on the internet? You know, like you were trading like pictures of boobs and accidentally like tweeted the DM of some boobs you had or your dick pic. Yeah, it was hacked. And now I'm just like people can hack cars and crash them and be like, oh no, seriously, I didn't do it.
Wasn't there just a movie made about this? How we're like gonna hack cars and hack power grids and hack nuclear. We're just hacking everything.
Yeah. You know? So is our future like here's one of the reasons I bring it up is because like there's a Chevrolet campaign out there, and like the Chevy campaign is like the shtick of the Chevy campaign is like our cars are luxury cars, and I bet you didn't know that. And so they ask people about like what brand do you think offers this stuff, and people are like, oh, I bet BMW offers that, and they're like, no, snaps like a Chevrolet. And so like there's one line in one commercial where they explain that there's like Wi-Fi in the car, and like this woman goes, oh man, Wi-Fi in the car, that's the dream. And I was like, who the fuck ever dreamt about that? It's a fucking nightmare. Wi-Fi in the car? What the hell? You don't want that shit in your car. Do you realize how long we've been driving cars without Wi-Fi? We've been doing fine. We got Wi-Fi everywhere else.
I mean, you're hitting on something really interesting for a lot of reasons here. Like, why? The first time I started to get really freaked out about this is when they started making those cars that can fucking parallel park themselves. Like, first of all, learn how to parallel park. Don't be an idiot. It's not that hard. Second of all,
Don't drive.
Get a bike. Okay. You know, that's what I do at the moment. But, like, what do you do if you hit someone? Like, oh, sorry, dude, my car did it.
Right. Like,
are you responsible? My computer will exchange information
with your computer.
Like, I don't want a car to park for. I don't want a car to do anything for me. That's why I learned to drive.
So I'm a big sci-fi dork. Have been my whole life, and every like 3 or 4 months, there's a news event that happens that makes me think, oh my god, it's like the science fiction book I read when I was like 11, or it's like, you know, like when Ferguson happened, I was like, oh shit, it's RoboCop, it's happening. And each time it's like, man, we're like one step closer to dystopian, you know, awfulness. And I think the car hack just sort of pushed me over the edge. I was like, nope, we hit dystopia like 15 years ago. This is it. This is what it looks like. You have legalized corruption in the American government, and then just a bunch of crazy hackers who are going to like break your car and steal your identity on your cell phone and then torture you.
Right.
And it sucks. I want my anti-dystopia back.
The only difference between our world and the world of the Transmetropolitan comic book is like the availability of like designer drugs. Like that's really literally the only thing left. as soon as they can like pump us full of soma and accept our problematic existence, we will literally be like a Warren Ellis comic book.
Well, hopefully there's some like really good-natured billionaire out there who's going to like start a colony on the moon, and I can go there and be like hang out with a bunch of whatever
like, nice
good natured socialists or something.
They can probably put Wi-Fi in cars in the moon.
That's when you find out we were never meant to go to the moon.
Yeah, because there's like Nazi worms because of, there or something.
Yeah, yeah. Michael Hayden put something there. It's awful. It's on the dark side of the moon. That's why he talks to the fruit growers. He's like, can you smuggle some bad shit and some bananas up to the moon? Like, that's what the space program is. You know, we're literally transporting the dead souls of trade unionists to the dark side of the moon. The only thing that's up there are space poltergeists. One day we'll have to destroy the moon.
And they're out for their vengeance.
As soon as we can get everyone used to not having tides. Well, President Trump orders the destruction of the moon. And for some reason, everyone has to eat more mangoes. And the mangoes make us docile.
Well, I think that's pretty much that.
So that happened.
That
your podcast
happened.
For Future Shock. Hopefully they can add some echoes to that in edit. Future Shock. I don't know. Maybe they can. I'm asking a lot of our new producer on her first day of producing. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for being here for whatever this was.
Life is pain.
Always fun.
Life is pain.
Right. Allie Watkins, you can follow her on Twitter.
Yes, you can.
And I'll even tell you how. Get a Twitter account. Then delete it. Then just like go to Twitter and read her stuff.
That's a better strategy.
Your Everyone delete your account.
Just knock on my door. Don't go to Twitter.
Right.
Just come talk
to me. You can follow at Allie Watkins around Adams Morgan. No. You can follow Allie Watkins at Aliwatkins.
Confirmed.
Right.
That is accurate.
And you can follow me at Deceiver, DCEIVER.
You can follow me, Zach Carter, at LIFEISPAIN.
That's right.
That's not true. You can't follow me there, but that is Life is Pain.
Right.
It's Zachary Carter with an H.
Exactly.
H is in house.
I'm going to say thank you for listening if this is the last segment, and I'm going to say we'll be right back if this is somehow the middle segment. So that's what happened this week. This podcast was produced and edited for one last time by Ibrahim Balki, with technical direction from Brad Shannon and assistance from Christine Canetta and Adriana Usero. I'm Jason Lincolns. This week we were joined by Huffington Post reporters Laura Barone-Lopez, Zach Carter, Arthur Delaney, and Allie Watkins. So That Happened is available on iTunes. Please check us out in the iTunes store for the Huffington Post's whole family of podcasts. Subscribe to them all and tell all of your friends. If there's something you'd like to hear us talk about, please send us an email to sothathappened@huffingtonpost.com. And as always, we thank you very much for listening, and we miss you already. So That Happened.
Well, that
your podcast
happened.
For future shock.